Well, today I had the chance to sit down with Brad Rempel from High Valley, Canada's top-selling country band with 500 million streams and multiple platinum singles. Now we dive into their new single, I'm Leaving You, and how the song's unique melody kind of came to life. Get a little sneak peek at their album dropping February of 2026 and their Canadian tour kicking off in March as well. Plus, we're going to get a little personal. Brad shares what keeps him sort of grounded and even the most Canadian thing about him that surprises a lot of American friends and fans for that matter. Here's my conversation with Brad Rempel of High Valley.
No, my sister lived in Belize. She taught English as a second language, and I went there when I was 16.
Right.
Met a radio station, and we've done 60 shows in Belize.
Wow.
At one point in time, 1% of every Belizean household owned a High Valley CD.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
How does it feel to kind of transcend that, to like have fans in places that you never really expected?
Well, we just got back from Norway, and I mean, I'll tell you, like, you know, I call it stomp grass, our kind of bluegrass stomp EDM mixture.
Yeah.
And they love that stuff out, like Scandinavia specifically, but all of Europe's always been good. It's like, I guess I never, when I started making music, obviously in Northern Alberta, I didn't think this music is for people from a certain region. I never even thought who it was for.
Right.
I guess it was for myself, you know?
Right.
So it's pretty fun to just, any country we go to that people want to have it, I love it.
So when you go to those places and you're introduced as like this Canadian act, is everybody just like, oh, it's so exotic?
Canada, thankfully, you know, there's a couple buzzwords overseas.
Sure.
Nashville is a big one for these country people, right?
Right.
So they've watched whatever movie or show they've watched, and they put the boots on, and you could make fun of people and be like, wow, they really don't understand. But let's be honest, you go down Broadway in Nashville and nobody there understands either. They've all on these, what I call country singer costumes, you know? So,
it's amazing.
Yeah. So man, I do think though, Canada is a good association as we travel, you know, people are pretty happy to see Canadians in all their countries, so that's a good thing.
And usually, like, you're always told that whenever you go to like a different country to wear a Canadian flag pin.
Yeah, so because they know you're like a peacemaker.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Because sometimes if they, you know, you go over there and you're just like, oh, I'm from North America, if they associate you with an American, sometimes it's a little different.
Yeah, it's tricky. My son's, like, we just got our green cards. My one son is American, my other son's Canadian. So it's, you know, someday, we've been living there for 15 years.
Yeah.
I've been writing in Nashville for 25 years. But, man, it's Canada has had, we've always chosen Canada because Canada definitely chose us first. Like, we had probably, I don't know, 8 to 10 radio singles here before we ever had our first hits down there, you know.
Right.
So but it's cool to take it anywhere in the world. We've been talking today about like Brazil. Brazil's huge in the country right now. South Africa's huge in the country. Everywhere is. It's like thanks to Taylor Swift and Morgan Wallen, I think every single corner of the planet loves country music now in some way.
Right. And did you ever think that, like, you know, growing up, La Crete, right?
Is that La Crete.
Yeah, dude, like, I think I saw the last time of population 4,000 right now.
Man, okay.
Which,
it's growing.
It's growing. Right, so in and out of La Crete is a little different from any other town, right?
Yeah, it's not like people are like, oh, I'm going up to Canada, and they assume you're going to Toronto. I never understand when I tell people I'm going to Canada, they always say, oh, wow, as if it's a big trip, and I'm like, you're going to New York City and I will be in Toronto faster than you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, of course.
So, but then when I tell people I'm going to Canada, like my hometown of Canada, then you should say, oh, wow, because that means I'm flying to Edmonton.
Right.
Which, unless you time it on the right day of the week, means you've got two flights.
Sure.
And then it's 700 kilometers from the airport
mm-hmm.
to drive to my town. And I was just talking about this off air, but it's like, we just got the road paved, I don't know how many years ago, 5, 6, 7. Either way, when I left, we did not have it paved. So the last 250 kilometers were still gravel.
Oh
Oh my God.
So
what's the maintenance like on that?
There was no maintenance. There was mud. There was so much mud. It was just crazy amounts of mud.
So yeah. Seasonally, that wasn't maintained. That wasn't like, you know.
No, the winter was actually the best. If you're not from there, you're freaked out about it driving on ice and snow, but it just packed it down and you kind of didn't know the difference and you just drove fast enough that it all felt smooth.
That's crazy, man. Holy smokes. And then look at you now, like going on pretty much all over the world playing country music.
We're trying to. It's weird. It's like this constant fight for me. I want to go all over the world because I love it so much, but my boys are 16 and 13, so I also want to stay home all the time.
Yeah.
So we figure it out. We're going to tour next year in March. We're going to tour all of Canada, and I'm really excited about it. I'm also really excited that it's my kids' spring break, so we're going to bring my family along for part of that tour. That'll help me not be homesick and get to see a lot of Canada at the same time.
Yeah. You know, I was actually going to ask too, like, what is something that your kids or even your wife or your whole family do to instantly snap you back to real life? Like, you know, kind of vacate from the charts and the streams and all that kind of stuff and kind of get back to what matters.
Well, the best example I have, and it's such a real story for me, such a true feeling. I just know I'm about to tell this story and I can feel it in my gut.
That's amazing.
My boys are both quarterbacks, and I mean, they both play multiple positions in football, but they have been quarterbacks. And I was about to go on stage at CCMAs to perform with, we had a song called Single Man that we were performing with Lindsay L.
Yeah.
And the OG version was just us, but for the award show we were doing with Lindsay, it was a really cool set. It was going to be really great. And right before I went on, I checked my phone and my wife texted and said, he just threw an interception.
Oh,
and I got this, because when your son's a quarterback and he throws an interception, everybody else is yelling, why did he throw that?
Yeah.
Everybody assumes your kid is like the worst person on the planet and he should probably just be tarred and feathered and, you know, banished
football,
to
basically.
A neighboring village.
Yeah, football, you know?
Yeah, so they now hate your kid very loudly. Yeah. And I'm not there to defend him, not like I would anyway. You just sit there and let him throw stones, but... So I had this just gross feeling in my stomach, just a pure disaster, you know? And we go on stage, we perform, it's on TV, I'm smiling, running around, pointing at the crowd, waving.
Sure.
It goes amazing. I don't think it could have gone any better. It was awesome.
Right.
Walk off stage, everybody's like, wow, that was awesome. And I could not remember. And I was like, why? I know I don't feel awesome. I know something hurts.
Yeah.
What is it? And then I remembered, oh, yeah, he just threw an interception, right?
Right.
And I called, you know, home, and the next pass had gone good or something, you know.
Right, sure.
But that is what snaps me back to reality. I'll call home, and they'll tell me about the game, and they will never even say, so, did you play on an award show today? We don't even bring that up, you know. There's no world where my boys say, so, did you have a good, you know, they're great kids, but I don't even bring it up. They just tell me about the football or basketball or baseball.
Sure, so this world's... that you're in, it matters to them, but it's not a topic of conversation when it's dad, right?
Yeah, I try incredibly hard to make it not, I tell them with their lives, I'm like, please know that your identity is so much bigger than a football, basketball, or baseball player.
Sure, yeah.
Because a lot of these kids, you know, I have friends that have made it all the way to the NHL and all of a sudden it's over.
Right.
One hit from behind and it's over.
Of course.
So you can't have your identity built in that. And if I'm going to be an example of that to them, I better show them that my identity is not a songwriter or a band, you know? So you got to kind of practice what you preach on that one.
Well,
I'll tell you, I did get a pretty amazing dream come true for me. I had this endorsement with vehicles and for a year I got to drive these new trucks and it was awesome.
I saw that.
And then the lady left that dealership and went and said, can you meet me at the Soho house? I just want to, you know, I left and took a new job. I'm like, sure. We go for dinner. And she's like, so I took a new job. It would involve you driving different. How would you feel about driving Porsches? And I'm like, yeah, I'd be fine. So I start driving brand new Porsches and I'm picking up my son from school in these awesome sports cars.
Yeah.
And this is what brings you back to reality. My 13-year-old, he's amazing. His name is Cash. He says, Daddy, no offense, aren't there like way more famous people that they could be giving these cars to? And he was right. Yeah. He was right because after a year and a half, they quit giving me free cars.
Oh, no.
So I now had to buy a car the other day for the first time in a long time.
And probably wasn't a Porsche, was it?
It was not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to like the Brad Rempel and High Valley reality, because I got some numbers that I kind of want to give you here.
Sure.
Top selling Canadian country bands in Canadian country music history. Which is insane, or at least one of them. You know, 500 million global streams, gold singles, even in the States. You got a platinums here in Canada, which is wild. And your sound is so unique, you know. And I often talk about this with a few friends of mine because they're huge country fans. And on the Combine, one of your very, very first singles.
Yeah,
probably
yeah.
One of the very first songs you probably put out.
It was the third one that we ever had a radio team on. Our first one was called Stand By You, which Stephen Lee Olsen wrote.
Right, yes.
Was later recorded by the Judds.
Right.
Our first one we ever had was a Sister Hazel cover, if you remember Sister Hazel.
Yeah.
And it was called Change Your Mind. It got added by, I think, one station.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the guy we had hired to run radio. He said, "Are you sitting down?" I said, "I can be." And I sat down and he told me that we got added to one station.
Right.
And
right.
I, you know, it was like humongous news. Yeah. We never got a second ad. It was just that one,
just that one station.
So anyway, On the Combine was our second song anybody ever heard.
Right, right. And then from there, I think it just kind of took off and Make You Mine was just one of the bigger songs. For
yeah,
you guys,
that
right?
On the Combine was our debut self-titled album. Then we had songs like Let It Be Me, Have I Told You on the second album. And then that third album was called County Line. And that had County Line, which I think was probably our first like platinum single, and then Make You Mine, which did the same, and She's With Me, which really went crazy, and then Come On Down, which all, so that was kind of a string of four that all kind of did things we hadn't experienced before.
And when you think back to all those songs, and even to the ones that you have today, and this new album that we're going to be talking about, like going back to like your sound and how so different it is from what you hear on country radio now, because it's country, it's contemporary, but you always have that bluegrass backbone to it, I guess, is that always like consciously built in, or is that just the High Valley sound that we're just like, because for example, She's With Me, right, arguably one of the most different songs that you guys have recorded, right? Was that on purpose? Was that told to be, you got to make this different?
No, She's With Me was a trio of writers, myself, Ben Stennis, and Seth Mosley, the exact same trio that wrote She's With Me, the exact same trio that wrote Make You Mine, that wrote Dear Life, that wrote Not Yet, Young Forever. We're just really good friends, and we would go to the beach with our families, and they would hang out and do fun beach stuff while we wrote songs.
Right,
and when
right.
we were done, we were like, we've accomplished enough, we'd go down and... But I will say this, Seth, the producer and co-writer on that, he didn't know anything about country. He was a rock guy. He was in a band called Me in Motion. He had the Christian rock haircut where one of his eyes covered, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, he's done a lot of work for POD, a lot of songs for POD and like those kind of NFL background songs for commercials and stuff. And he's like, we were listening to Radioactive Radio by Imagine Dragons.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So we're listening to Radioactive. He's like, what would a country version of that be? And that's when we wrote She's With Me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So if you listen to Imagine Dragons circa 2014, and then listen to She's With Me, it'll make a lot more sense.
Definitely does now. Yeah. That's so interesting. That's amazing, man. And let's talk about this brand new song that you got out now, I'm Leaving You. Already a pretty special song. When you first heard it, now correct me if I'm wrong, when you first heard it and you started trying to form this song, it changed as things kind of progressed.
Yeah. And once again, it was with Seth and Seth. now, of course, he's done a lot more country and he's had stuff with Tim McGraw and Gabby Barrett and Keith Urban. And he's done really well. But we're writing and you asked about if we do it consciously. I would say I just played bluegrassy things and Seth made them cool.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to make him cool, and he didn't know how to make him bluegrass. So between the two of us, we could do both.
Sure.
Now that we know what that is and how that works, I still do the exact same thing. I play boring old school melodies on guitar, and he makes them cool. And this time around, we were saying, "When the stars run, when the dawn run out," or just keeping it very chill like that. And whenever he would turn the mic off and we would re-listen to the take in between and the headphones, I'd go, Winter Cloud. And he'd be like, what's that? I was like, I'm just singing it like if Ricky Skaggs was singing this song.
Sure, yeah.
He said, well, why don't you do that for real? And then he hit record and I just started doing it. And as soon as I did it,
yeah.
It's like a cow yodeling,
sure,
you know?
Yeah.
When we did that, there was like, okay, that's the magic right there. That's the actual kind of mountain vibe, you know?
That's crazy to think that. But like, was there ever, because again, you talk about like having the trust behind,
yeah,
you know, Seth saying like, you're going to make it sound good. I'm just going to make it sound High Valley.
Yeah.
As much as I can. Was there ever a point in time during that song where you're just like, you know, this is going to be very slow tempo, maybe?
No, the tempo was always there. I don't think we changed the tempo at all. It was just the monotony of how we were singing it.
Right.
And I think you can find that in everybody. It's like when Josh Ross really goes for it and gets that growl in his voice, you know?
Yeah.
Or when Owen Riegling goes for it and gets that kind of nasal Eric Church kind of thing going on.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
When you really go for it and just do your thing, that's usually where the magic is.
Right.
And I always make this statement. I say when we're writing, and I write a song almost every day, and I say, nobody here cares at all if we write a really great song today. And
right.
That's literally worth $0 and 0 cents.
Sure.
So you're singing and it sounds really great. Nobody cares.
Right.
It's like you got to find that magic that makes it like special and awesome and incredible.
Sure.
And that's what we stumbled on backwards, you know?
Right.
Every day you're kind of like, you wake up in the morning and you mumble and you rhyme like girl and world and then hopefully you just fall backwards into some amazing analogy or something that,
sure.
that you know, and that's what art, I'd love to say I knew exactly how to do it, but if I did, I would have a lot more hits, you know? It's like, I think Toby Keith said you write 1,000 bad ones to write a good one, and then you write another 500 to write your second good one, and then your goal from that point forward is to make the gaps shorter.
Right.
And that's where I am now, is just like I've been writing in Nashville for 25 years, and the gaps, thankfully, are getting a little shorter, but there's still gaps.
Yeah.
You know, and you just got to be honest with yourself and also admit, I don't always know. I remember, and I'm not going to say who. I will never say who, but I came home and I told my wife, I said, I don't usually say this, but I think today was an absolute flop.
Oh.
It was horrible.
With another songwriter in Nashville.
And that song at that point in time ended up getting cut by one of the most famous people that had ever recorded one of my songs.
Really?
At the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, it would be bad for me to say because my co-writers are lovely people, and I don't want to say that. Yeah.
So, talk about bridging the gap of like, you know, closing the gap of, you know, writing bad to good songs.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard that Make You Mine. It was just like that.
Yeah, it was fast. We were writing a different song that day. We spent 90% of the day writing a different song,
sure.
which sucked. We ended up giving up, and I played Road to Avonlea. Remember that? Have you ever heard of that show?
Yeah, of course.
I played a YouTube video clip of Gus Pike and Felicity King dancing by like a lighthouse, kind of a barn dance
Stop.
Thing. And I told Seth and Ben, I was like, if there was a modern barn dance, what would the soundtrack sound like
sure.
instead of this fiddle player in Prince Edward Island?
Right.
And we wrote Make You Mine like in an hour and a half.
So you wrote that, you know, for lack of a better term, that barn burner pretty quickly.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And have you always tried to like kind of recreate that? Like you're always just like on YouTube looking at old shows. You're just like,
you know what?
Where's the inspiration?
I was saying today at lunch, I said, if I moved back to Canada ever, I'd probably move to Prince Edward Island. That feels the most authentic
sure.
to like what I love.
Right.
Now I might get bored after 3 days because I know it's super chill. But when I go there on vacation, it's incredible. I just try and get inspired by it. We've got a little farm out there in a place called Spring Hill, Tennessee, and you get out there to get inspired. Anything that can kind of emulate or imitate Alberta, where I'm from, just that kind of stuff inspires me to kind of write that down-home kind of stomp grass stuff.
Sure, yeah. So you have this new song, I'm Leaving You. It's, I guess, the first taste of the new album.
Yeah.
Right? February 2026.
Yes, sir.
Is that like a for sure thing? Like, do we have a title for the album?
I have a working title. It's
okay.
called Paradise and Hurricanes.
Okay.
No idea if that's going to stick. I'm kind of a last minute, because I pitch my songs and I write so much for other people.
Right.
I'm always like, I have a, right now it's a five to beat. It's a thing on my box, on my drop box. If you force me right now to finish up my album today in this studio, those five songs will be on the album.
Okay.
But I hope that next week I write songs that are better and these are no longer good enough.
Right.
Every time I write, I'm hoping to move one song out of that box link.
Sure.
And so that's why I never say this is the album until it's time to finish the album.
Right, right.
Also, I pitch, like right now there's one of those songs that's on hold for Shaboozy, which is really exciting. But I also, if he doesn't cut it, then I want to cut it. So,
oh, interesting.
So I'm always playing stuff for other people, and it's just a lot of fun. I was just in, we had a show in Norway, and I stayed extra a few days and did one day of writing in Oslo, and then I flew to Stockholm and did 2 days of writing in Sweden. And the first song we wrote there is the one that the Shaboozy Camp is at least checking out right now. So
yeah, no,
that's cool.
That's interesting. The environment, I guess, changes your perspective of how you're writing songs.
I think I've always been into that EDM meets bluegrass vibe, which is kind of what Make You Mine is.
Yeah, of course.
And the Swedes are pretty incredible at, you know, Avicii was massive.
Yeah.
Our first record deal in Nashville was never going to be a country deal. We were actually getting signed out of New York to an EDM record company.
Interesting.
Ultra Records offered us our first deal. It was going to be tons of remixes of Make You Mine. We were basically going to be the country Avicii was the point. Yeah.
And I've heard remixes of Make You Mine too.
Yeah.
Like they're out there.
They're
which
out
is
there.
Wild.
Yeah.
It's and it's so interesting.
We were 1 year ahead of time. The label kiboshed the whole thing. And a year later, Maren Morrison Zed did one. And,
right.
And Post Malone, or not Post, but Marshmello and Kane Brown.
Yep.
So we were, it was 1 year too early.
No, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're almost like the pioneers of that.
I don't think so. Had we done it, I'd say we were, but
sure,
we never did it.
Yeah. So you're going to be taking this new album on the road with you.
Yeah.
You have a show at OLG Stage in Niagara Falls, which is not a part of this tour, but I'm certain that you're probably going to be playing some of the new music at the show.
Yeah, newer music, but I will be honest with you. What I love more than I don't really love playing. Here's a new song you've never heard. What I love playing is here's the OG version of a song you have heard by somebody else.
Okay.
So we break it down. I love writing songs for other people, but we only do like a couple of them. So I love lately we've been doing Jade Eagleson cut one of my songs called All Night to Figure It Out.
Oh, yeah.
And then Josh Ross had the song called Single Again.
Yeah.
So we play Single Again. We play All Night to Figure It Out. That's pretty fun for me, breaking it down and doing that kind of stuff.
Is it so interesting to even look out into the crowd to see their face and their reaction to a song that they have heard before from another artist, and they're just like, wait a minute. Like, it's almost like a weird thing that clicks into them that it's just like, that's not the artist sometimes that writes the song. You
know? Yeah, yeah. In the Josh case, I wrote it with Josh, so
right.
So it's both. But at that point, they're just like, why does this guy not sound nearly as cool?
But come on.
But no, it's a lot of fun. And man, the whole Josh thing's been cool because we went out on the Nickelback tour. He was opening, and we wrote he recorded three songs at that point, and then now on this new record, there's a few more. So there'll be five songs so far that he's cut that we've wrote together. He comes out to the farm, and we do these weekends retreats where we got producers and writers everywhere and driving the Razor around and fishing and writing songs. So it works out pretty awesome.
Can I ask you about fishing real quick? Because
as long as you know that I suck at it, sure.
I was just about to ask that. That's what I mean. Is that like, because I'm not much of a fisherman. Like, I've gone in a few times, and if I get a few bites, I get super pumped. But I know that when people go out and they, what I just said, get a few bites, but nothing really happens, their mood is changed for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Does that make it much more difficult to write that day when you start the day fishing and nothing really happens?
So I should, I hope I don't lose too much street cred with this response. I have a pond. I have a farm. I have a pond. It's stocked. Many fish have been caught. I do not fish.
Cheat code then.
I do not fish at all. My boys, one of them loves fishing. The other one doesn't care. I make sure there's a fire, s'mores, you know, supplies.
Yeah.
And say, oh, look, you caught a fish. I love hanging out. I love riding the four-wheelers and dirt bikes and doing all that. The actual standing still waiting for a fish, I'm like, man, I don't even want to eat the fish, so no thanks.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, It's because you go back to like when you're talking about going to PEI, you're like, I can go there for 3 days, but I guess because it's so relaxed there, it's so chill, like I would get bored, right? It's so funny to think that like you'd be out there and you'd be having a lot of other artists or even like songwriters and everybody's enjoying themselves. You're just like, what are we doing next?
Yeah, you know what? And that, the beauty of songwriting is one guy needs to go over there and catch a fish. The other guy wants to have a fire. The other guy wants to watch football on TV and the other guy's still working on the song.
Right.
There's different personalities. There's people that write songs by shutting up and just getting inside their brain.
Sure.
And I'm more of a verbal diarrhea guy where I'm just spitballing, like probably to a fault. Some guys need to turn it off. Some guys can't take a break until the verse and chorus are done and then maybe reward yourself with a little lunch break or something.
Yeah.
So there's different styles, but I've done it all, but no, I've never had a fishing or lack thereof influence my songs.
Right. So you've been writing in Nashville for, you said 25 years, right?
25 years since the first time I came. I've only lived there for 15.
Yeah, okay. So being down there for 15 years, I'm sure a lot has changed for you. But even as a Canadian being down there, is there something that you still do that's very so much Canadian that Americans are just like, wow, you're not from around here, are you?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm trying to think what it would be. Man, I don't know for sure. You'd have to ask one of them.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But I can tell you this, that every time I go in a green room here and I see ketchup chips, Aero bars, Smarties, Coffee Crisp, I grab them and I have this big duffel bag and I just throw them all in there. And then when I come home, I say, guess what, boys? And they're like, ketchup chips every time.
You're so popular then,
right? Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So you're going to be at the OLG stage in Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
What's one song on the set list? Because we talked about it earlier about how you love to perform some of the songs that you have co-written or written. What's one song that you're just like, they're going to be blown away by this one. Check this out.
I feel like IBUB is probably, people talk to us about Make You Mine and She's With Me the most.
Yeah.
IBUB feels almost like it's a bigger hit than either one of those. That's the moment that I get very excited for every night.
Why is that?
It was either, I think it was our first number one we ever had.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, Make You Mine barely went in the top 10.
Mind blowing to me.
What happened is then it went gold, then it went platinum, then it went gold in the US, then it became a hit again here for the second time, then it went out in Europe and it kind of had this like 7 year life.
Right.
I think that's why it is what it is.
Right.
But IBUB was our first number one. It's got that EDM. I wrote it with Jensen Vaughn, who pretty much only writes dance and hip hop and pop hits. Once again, had never really done country before.
So interesting.
That song just does it. I mean, for me, I love singing it every night. It's like feels like an old Irish drinking song or something. It's like it just has that kind of almost like not a sea shanty, but it's almost like a hymn kind of. It's just everybody knows it right away.
Right. Could you see that being a remix one day?
Oh yeah, I can. I hear everything as a remix.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is crazy, man.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Everything. So another weird thing is I never sing along as a lead singer.
Okay.
In my entire life, if you get me in a car and play a song, I will harmonize.
Interesting.
100%. So I sing harmonies on pretty much everything. Like when we record, the three guys you hear singing are usually all me.
Oh, get out of here!
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is that like a discovered talent that you had, or is
no?
That like something
I grew
that you
up.
Do?
I grew up. My family recorded when I was four. I had two songs on our Rempel family album when I was 4 years old. So we've been harmonizing since I was before I knew how to say the word harmony. I was doing it.
That's interesting, man. Can I ask you actually before we go here? You know, you've worked with Granger Smith, who now is a pastor, which is wild.
Absolutely,
strong pivot from country music, but. Has there ever been any consideration with all the albums that you've created? Because most songs you do allude to your faith.
Yeah.
Has there ever been an idea that maybe one day there would be a faith-driven full album?
100%, yeah. I would love to call it a gospel album, a Christian album. I don't know that I would say like a worship album or maybe a hymns album, but sometimes I wish I could just do a bluegrass gospel album.
Okay.
But there's another part of me that wants to do a gospel album and a bluegrass album, and those would be two different things.
Okay, yeah.
Can't quite decide. I will say this, the phone is ringing a lot right now with the whole Jelly Roll Brandon Lake collaboration. And
yeah, that's what I was just going
to
bring up.
Ann Wilson and I did a duet a couple of years ago, and I was actually just talking to her yesterday. She's big in Christian music. So that when we got signed in 2007, the first time we got signed in Nashville, wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, you're almost pushing 20 years. That's crazy.
18 years ago, our first record deal. Yeah, we that label is a Christian label that signed Lauren Daigle. Lauren Daigle,
yeah,
and I mean, she's massive, right? Super Bowl and all this stuff. So we've been, what they wanted with us at that point in time was this positive, family-friendly country stuff, and it would get played on Christian radio. Now, of course, that never happened, but I called the head of marketing last week from that label, and I said, bro, you are 18 years ahead of schedule because my phone has been ringing like for all that kind of stuff lately.
Sure, yeah, of course.
So I'm sure... I don't know that we'd even have to record new music. We just maybe need to re-put out some of those songs and say, hey, look, here it is.
Right.
Here's what you've been but I would love to do, honestly, I'd love to do with my family. I'd love to do some of those old hymns and those bluegrass standards. I just love recording music, so I think I want to do it all. I just want to do it right. I don't want to do, like, let's throw a banjo on a couple Christian songs and, sure, and say this is a High Valley record. I want to make sure it's, like, done right.
Right.
I kind of want Alison Krauss. We've very, very quickly talked, not long enough, but about her producing a bluegrass record on me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that might be a gospel record. So that would be pretty sick.
That'd be amazing for 2026 for you to put out a High Valley record. And then I guess it would be, what, a High Valley family sort of?
You know what's crazy is bluegrass is referred to as the High Lonesome Sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Monroe called it that,
mm-hmm,
Father of Bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this working title in my mind for it'd be like High Valley,
mm-hmm,
but it would somehow, and some artist that knows how to be cool would do this, but they would somehow put like High Lonesome Sound,
right,
and Valley. It'd almost be like you cross out the Valley and just put Lonesome Sound.
Sure, yeah.
And it would basically be, this is High Valley doing the High Lonesome Sound, AKA Bluegrass. Got to figure that out. You know, right now that just sounds like a DJ's nightmare for how do you
yeah,
how do you read this, you know?
Thanks, man.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll figure it out. But I know my mom, I would love it. My mom and dad would love it if I could do a hymns record. Just gotta figure it out.
It's so interesting to think that, like, it just seems like it's already been a thing in your brain for quite some time.
Yeah.
Like the way you just spoke about it, it's not like something that you're just like, I'm answering a question right now. You're
yeah,
just like, this is something I've thought about for a while.
Yeah, we've thought about it all. We've thought about doing a Brad Rempel record that's more like the Young Forever style, the
sure,
like more Ryan Tedder side of my brain,
yeah.
One Republic kind of stuff. I've thought of doing like an artsy-fartsy, rootsy thing, but then Mackenzie Porter and her husband beat me to it, which I'm just a massive fan of that anyway, so I'll just try and, you know, force them to let me write some songs with them or something. But I just love music. I don't know. Maybe because I grew up without super clear definitions of genres.
Yeah.
We didn't have radio or TV, so we just heard music and either liked it or didn't.
Because you grew up on like Ricky Skaggs albums,
yeah, big
right?
time Ricky Skaggs, yeah. And when I started stomping underneath the bluegrass melody, everybody's like, "Oh, this guy loves Mumford and Sons," and I'd literally never heard of Mumford and Sons.
Sure.
So when Make Your Mind came out, everybody assumed we were like big time Mumford fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and we were just big time Ricky Skaggs fans, which
right,
is why he sings the second verse of that song.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's so interesting, man. I honestly have been such a fan of you guys for so long. Like I said, when I mentioned On the Combine.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one song that, like, a few friends of mine, like I was mentioning, like, they were the ones that kind of introduced me to your music because they're farmers.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they're so much gravitating towards songs about farming because it's something that they know, but it's like, it makes them feel less like they're the only ones that are doing it. Because
totally,
they've been doing it since they were so young. And their lives outside of their farm wasn't much. It was just, this is what you did. You
went
to school Monday to Friday. You were on the farm Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
You know,
I tell my boys that if they ever complain about chores on Saturday, I said, hey, just so you know, I would get home and get on the combine. And then when I was done, I would sleep. And then I would go to school and
right,
rinse and repeat as desired. You
right,
know? So please don't complain. You know, right. Don't complain.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I remember hearing somewhere that one of your sons is designing shoes.
Yeah, Drew does a ton of them. He did a lot of Bailey Zimmerman's sneakers.
Stop it.
Yeah, the ones on Jimmy Kimmel and the ones on New Year's Eve, Ryan Seacrest, all that stuff. Yeah, he does. He's got a full-time. It's not full-time because he's in high school, but I'm not going to tell him this, but he has enough clients that he could drop out right now and have a good career. He's,
wow.
He's got I just delivered some to Gary Roberts yesterday.
Stop it.
That Drew trained with Gary last summer, so he did a little thank you gift for him. And yeah, you can check him out. I posted him on our Insta. But his Insta is Drew by Drew Customs, because his name's Drew, and who drew on your shoes? You know,
right.
Drew by Drew Customs. So yeah, he's having fun. My garage smells and looks like paint. It's all covered in paint.
That's amazing. Now, how did that start?
He watched a YouTube video of some kid that gets flown around by LeBron James to like bring him in a private jet. Like, here's your shoes for today,
right.
Mr. James, you know? And his goal is like, I'm going to do that for football players. And so he started, he got a sander and a spray paint, the whole thing. He's a paint sprayer, and he tapes him up, sands him down, you know, acetone. I don't know. You'd have to ask him. We should get him on the air.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, his goal is to do that for athletes. He's done quite a few like college football players. And some like University of Tennessee hired him to do some for some staff. And he's got a Trent Dilfer at University of Alabama, Birmingham is having him do a different cause every week. So today is actually UAB's first game. Side note, Sam Hunt was a quarterback there back then.
Yeah.
So UAB's on TV tonight, and Drew, the coach, is wearing Drew's customs. And then whatever sponsor's logo's on their charity, he writes a check. The team writes a check to them. And so Drew's got 16 pair from that college right now in our garage, and he's every week he ships out a pair. So he's
gonna be more famous than you.
Oh, he already is
in the shoe industry. Come on, man.
He already is, man. I'm well known as Drew's dad. That's where.
So how come he hasn't made like a custom pair of like Blundstones for you or something like that for on stage?
I don't think I'm quite cool enough to wear his work. Is the short answer right there. Yeah,
man, that is so cool. That is amazing. Yeah. I appreciate you coming in and chatting about everything High Valley, going back to, you know, like I said, on the combine. What, 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, I could have been done right there and would have been fine with it, because I got to write that song with Paul Brandt at Paul's house. And if you can imagine how famous Paul Brandt is everywhere, let alone Alberta, being an Alberta boy, I was like, wait a minute, did I just hang out with Paul Brandt and write a song?
Sure, yeah.
Then Paul produced that track on that record. It's funny, I live right beside the restaurant. Not right, I live 1 minute from the restaurant. When we were trying to convince Paul to do this with us, our record label took him and his wife to Judge Bean's Barbecue in Brentwood, Tennessee. And it's such a dive. Looking back now, I'm like, why didn't we take him somewhere nice? But he was in Nashville, so we found out, we took him there, bought him some brisket and beans, you know, and a sandwich. And he said yes. We wrote the song, recorded it, and it's not a big hit at all. It's like it was top 20, you know, at best. But man, people still talk about it all the time.
Sure.
And at the time, you know, we'd never had a top 20, so I thought this was about, I guess I thought I was Garth Brooks. You know, it was the biggest moment of my life, and it's still really special that Paul did that. Must have been some good beans, you know. Must have been some good barbecue.
Yeah, not much of a dive anymore, I guess. Amazing. Well, Brad, thank you so much for hanging out with us. High Valley's got a brand new single out, I'm Leaving You. You can hear it here on High Country Radio. Album coming out in February, new tour in March. I mean, God, dude, 2026 is going to be busy for you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Amazing.
It'll be great.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.